Today on the Radcast Show, we have Sydney Kasner, and today we're going to talk about professional licensure and credentialing, why it's important to have not only credentials, but also licensure. We'll talk about state licensure and how that came about, what states have state licensure, and then is it difficult or easy for, say, a traveling tech or, say, you know, for someone that wants to move to a different location? What is the process of getting that other state licensure like? So, Sydney, thanks for being on the show. And how about you give us a quick bio or history or tell us what you're doing now?
Hello. Good morning, Cheryl. And thank you for having me on your awesome podcast. So my name is Sydney, and I'm a Rad Tech student at Lynn Benton Community College in Oregon. We met at the Student Leadership Development Program just a few months ago, and all of this talk about licensure and credentialing is very applicable to me and anyone else interested in entering the profession, so I'm excited to talk about it.
Well, so first, since you said you're a student, congratulations, and when is graduation date?
It's February 22nd, but who's counting?
Exactly. So your end goal, in addition to being an exceptionally well-rounded and effective and great clinical technologist and patient caregiver, your end goal right now with school coming up on graduation is to get that credential. So a credential is provided by the registry, the American Registry of Radiologic Technologists, and they offer different pathways for credentialing. So why don't you discuss maybe the primary pathways, and then we'll lead into what some of those post-primaries are.
Sure. So the primary pathways, there's radiography, which is where I'm going. There's nuke med, radiation therapy, MRI, which is magnetic resonance imaging, and sonography.
So those are the pathways, the credentials where you go to school, and as soon as you finish that, you can take that registry and you get that great passing score, and then you get those letters behind your name. But then there's something that is referred to as post-primaries. And I know when I teach and I start, you know, orientation with new students, you have to explain what's the difference in a primary and then what is a post-primary. So what, I know that list of post-primaries is long. So how about you just give us a couple of ideas, a couple of examples of what a post-primary, how you add that on to your primary certification?
Sure. Yeah. So post-primary is just if you already have your certified credentials, you've already got the letters behind your name, and you're interested in adding more to them. So some examples, actually MRI would also be, there's also a post-primary option. Or there's bone densitometry, there's cardiac interventional radiography, CT, and things like that. There's a big long list of things you can get into.
So I was going to ask you real quick, being a radiography student, what post-primaries do you see maybe your fellow students, your classmates, or what post-primaries seem to be popular, or they seem to be maybe a trend in which students are going following Rad Tech school?
Sure. I would say the single most thing out here in Oregon is definitely CT. And then there are quite a few students interested in MRI as well. And then a handful of people I know are interested in cath lab. And I think cath lab is much different in the pace and setting that you're in compared to CT and MRI.
I will say I recently spoke at a conference in Denver for the AHRA, which is Hospital Radiology Administrators, and several people came to me and said there's just such a shortage of CT techs right now. And this was nationwide, that they're just having a really difficult time finding and retaining CT techs. So maybe it's a good thing that that's a popular post-primary right now.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about education. So I'm old enough that I went to a hospital-based program. Now, I had an associate's degree because I went through a community college as well. But back in the day, there were still hospital-based programs that weren't associated with a university or an institution like a community college. That all changed when the registry set the minimum standard to be an associate's level. But then so many people, I believe, seek that bachelor's level. So let's talk a little bit about entry-level education, which is that associate's level, and then how Rad Techs can continue their educations.
So the entrance level now would be any ARRT approved program in your area. So the minimum degree is an associate's. However, like you said, a lot of people are interested in the bachelor's level. And that usually it requires more time. It's more money that you're going to pay. But it is useful if you're interested in management or administration at all, or if you're interested in changing careers at some point, getting into something else. And certain fields require a bachelor's degree to get started.
Well, you know, I'm an advocate of continued education and not just formal education, you know, because I have my doctorate, but that may not be, it absolutely not for everybody. You know, that's a level of maybe insanity. I'm not sure. But so considering that this podcast is also all about continuing education, the registry is recently, so we know that there are 24, you're required to have 24 continuing education credits per biennium. So that means every 2 years on your birthday, you have to submit those credits. And the registry recently implemented their new CQR process, in which, you know, every 10 years you will take an assessment to see if there's an area in which maybe you're not as up to speed as you were when you took the registry, or maybe you're lacking a little bit, or maybe you just need a refresher. And in that CQR process, if there's a deficit in your self-assessment, then of your 24 CE credits, some part of that may be dedicated to a specific topic. In my case, it would be physics. I would probably have to do all 24 of them in physics. So because this podcast is also about continuing education, the whole podcast, you know, the whole series, you can find different topics. If you need physics, or if you need treatment planning, or if you need patient care, we have different things that work that way. But let's talk a little bit about continuing education. What do you think rad techs get out of continuing education? Because that was always one thing I thought about. You know, you would just sit down and do the magazine quiz. And sometimes it was applicable to what I was doing, and sometimes it wasn't. So kind of give me your take. What, you know, what's the feel of continuing education out in clinic? And then how do you think that thought has changed with this new CQR process?
Yeah, I feel like the new CQR has made people look at it as truly more educational, as opposed to just checking something off the box to keep their credentials. And there's also there's the magazines where you can do the easier way to get them done and it's more manageable. But I do think that the conferences available, online classes, like professional meetings, are very interesting to people and often get a lot of excitement once you get there. It's just the planning and taking the time to get them scheduled isn't as fun. But I do think now people are looking at it as more like, oh boy, I got to study, instead of just got to get this done so I keep my license.
Exactly. And I think there's been some misunderstandings about the CQR process. But in my opinion, if you do focus on those things that, you know, maybe you could use a refresher on, it's not taking any more of your time because you've got to get the CE credits anyway. It's just a little more structured. It's a little more designed for something you may need to touch up on. So let's talk about licensure. So one of the questions that we had is, how is it different than credentialing? And so we've discussed how credentials are, but licensure seems to be more of a state-by-state thing. And we'll get into that a little bit. But one of the questions was, why is this important? So professionally and educationally, the ASRT says that patient safety can be increased and unnecessary radiation exposure can be decreased if examinations are performed by educationally prepared and clinically competent radiologic technologists. So the licensure process is kind of a way of holding people responsible for that education and training and clinical competence. So what is Oregon a licensure state? And do you know, what is the process to get licensure in Oregon?
So yes, Oregon is a licensure state. And for us, of course, there's a fee. You're also going to need to provide proof of your credentials that you've gotten, and proof of your education, which you completed. They also do criminal history, a pretty thorough criminal history, and background checks as well. And then there's maintenance fees as well.
And so you pay an annual fee to the state of Oregon to maintain that licensure?
I believe so.
Do you know if there are any additional CEs required just for the state? For example, in California, they have certain requirements for fluoroscopy that aren't requirements in other states. Texas and some, and maybe Florida require live continuing education credits. So in addition to the ones that you can do on your own or self-directed learning, there's a component that they want to be like live education, you know, with a lecture or a, you know, a panel talk or something like that. So does Oregon have any specific CE requirements?
No, not to my knowledge.
Okay. Like I said, those, you hear most about California, Texas, and Florida when it comes to things being
the
a little
special ones.
Exactly, yep. They are special. So I know for almost all of the states have state licensure. I think there are just a handful of them that haven't reached that point yet. Several of them have bills before their state legislatures. I know Missouri has a bill that's gone up recently. Alabama has a bill that's gone up recently. And for example, with the Missouri Senate bill, it was just introduced this year. And it said that they're forming a task force, actually, to see what the need and what the efficacy of state licensure is. And it said that they're going to report on topics, including risk associated with non-licensure. So what happens, Tennessee, which is where I'm from, just went through this a few years ago. And I know it was a kind of a statement that was made during the process where they said, someone has to have licensure to get to do haircuts. The person cutting your hair has to have a license, but the person doing your x-ray does not. Looking at the risk associated with non-licensure, what requirements would they have? So like I said, talking about Missouri now, would they have the same requirements as Oregon, or are they going to have those special requirements like California, Texas, or Florida? And it said that they really want to make sure that the needs of their rural health care are met and that they've got enough available radiologic technologists. So they've got a full task force going. They said it's physicians, rad techs, some administrators, and some other healthcare professionals. So it takes a while for a bill to get through the state. Like I said, in Tennessee, it took 3 or 4 years for it to get through. And now they're working on the part to see how they're going to implement it. So now that it's passed, now what do we do with it? So a question I think I'll ask you is, why do you think state licensure is important? And then we'll talk about what it looks like from state to state.
Absolutely. So I understand the concept behind wanting to keep rural hospitals staffed and taking care of your rural patients, but there's just so much at risk when you don't have licensure. For example, we learn a lot about techniques and what underexposure or overexposure looks like. We learn about modeling. And when you don't have that knowledge, I could see something, an example being you underexpose an image, you've got model, you don't know that that's a bad picture because you've got what looks like the right anatomy. You turn it in, and then that radiologist might miss a diagnosis. The patient might have a delayed diagnosis because they didn't see it the first time, so they're still doing tests that aren't necessary. So that's just a lot of risk to that same rural patient that they're worried about. And there's also, of course, like the lack of education about radiation safety. So how many times are we repeating pictures to try to get it? Those kind of things. Are we advocating for, the reason behind an exam matching up with the patient's history? Those kind of things.
So I think it's interesting that you mentioned patient safety and overexposures, and those are really difficult concepts for you to learn as a student, for you to maintain as a, as a technologist, because you do get so busy and so rushed and sometimes things just don't work out the way that you want them to. So the fact that somebody would not have the education in patient safety, radiation safety, the way radiation works exactly, I think would be a detriment. So I agree with you on the, state licensure really looking at those kinds of things, right there. So How does it differ state to state? And we talked about that a little bit in that some of the states had some kind of special, you know, special add-ons that they require. And I know nursing also works with state licensure the same way. One of my daughters is a nurse. One of my daughters is an educator, and they both have state licensure. And sometimes it's a little difficult to move from state to state to state. So what is your idea? What is your opinion on how it works for a technologist? Say you in Oregon want to move to, you know, another state, a state that does have licensure. You want to move to Montana. How does it work for you to be able to work in that state?
Well, I think it's pretty manageable and reasonable, the way that we're able to move across states as technologists. You pretty much just have to look up the new state's licensing requirements. So Montana, I would, you know, Google the Montana, I'm assuming they have a board of some kind that provides your state license. And then I would apply for licensure there. I show them proof of my education that I'm competent. And then if they have any add-on things like we talked about with California, you would have to do that, which would be a little bit of a pain, but usually those licenses are good for a good amount of time. So very worthwhile and pretty easy to achieve.
So I know I am in, you know, I have some professional colleagues that work in as travel techs. So whether that's rad techs or radiation therapists, and they travel. And I know that any tech that works in a state that requires this licensure, and like we said, there's only a handful that don't require licensure. So if you're traveling to any state that requires licensure, you've got to have that state license. And that means whether you're working full-time or a contract, you know, if you're just doing a 13-week contract, or maybe if you went for a PRN. So coming with you coming out of school, and I'll bring up another point here in just a second. Does something like this appeal to you? Is that a popular mode for people to travel and to work and to get some experience? Now, I will say that most travel tech companies or most people that are looking for a PRN or traveling technologist, they require 24 months of experience. So, is this something that you would look at in the future? After you got that 24 months experience, and how does this job opportunity, how does that sound to you?
For me personally, I think it's interesting. I'm married and kind of more settled down. I'm an older than average student at 27, but I have heard many younger people that are entering programs in their early 20s. They seem to be much more interested in tackling that, especially, you know, if you love travel and you love constant changes and variety, it's very appealing. I mean, the pay is great and you get to go new places and meet new people. So I think a lot of younger people are very interested in that field of traveling technologists.
So why do you think there's the 24-month requirement that you have that experience? And do you see any cons to that? Do you see any negatives to not taking people who may be right out of school? And like you said, maybe a little more mobile, maybe a little more willing to travel, may have that freedom.
Right. I believe that the experience required beforehand, it makes sense. Let's say that you do most of your clinical experience in a level 4 and you just do a rotation to a busier hospital. You're not going to have as many skills and tricks up your sleeve as someone who's been working at a level 1 trauma center for, you know, a year. So I could understand why they want to have you prepared for anything. But at the same time, oftentimes, I think if you get started somewhere and you're a really good, hard worker, the people that you want to keep in a company are going to want to stay at a place that they get a job at as long as they're treating them well. So it's kind of, you know, trying to attract those people interested before they're taken by someone else.
Right. Well, and I think it's a valid point that you brought up about working hard to reach that position and then employers retaining, you know, the best that they have. So that would be the people that, you know, have worked hard to get to those positions. So let's relate that back real quickly to the licensure and credentialing. Do you think people who are, you know, working hard to get to those real solid positions, do you think that they see a benefit in state licensure, kind of like you did, you know, where you said that, you know, that's the accountability, that's who holds the responsibility. So how does licensure play into maybe professionalism and to those people who are, you know, striving for those jobs?
Yeah, but state licensure as a professional is a great way to network and to meet new people that can be your future employers. So putting yourself out there and going to those conferences that are provided by your state licensing group or by your state affiliates is a great way to network and get jobs in the first place. So I think there's a lot of professional aspects that you can get from a state licensure that we didn't even touch on yet.
So I agree with you completely because I have, you know, well, you and I met at a, you know, at a conference where we were discussing legislation and advocacy, state licensure came up, certification came up, educational requirements came up. And so I think once again, if we go back to the education piece of all of this, it's just informing people of, you know, the benefits of being properly credentialed, properly licensed, and then the benefits of professionalism. Like you said, you know, where you can network with people and learn different things and maybe learn things that are applicable and maybe more relevant to what you're doing instead of, you made the comment earlier, just, you know, kind of checking off the boxes so that you can keep your certification.
Right.
So this has really been I love talking to you about what's going on kind of on the inside and getting a feel for what people or, you know, what professionals, what rad techs, what they're thinking and where they're going. So do you have anything else you'd like to add or anybody else you'd like to speak to?
No, not that I can think of. I would just say that I really do think that getting involved in as many of these processes as you can, as early as you can, is so helpful to the development of our profession. I would highly recommend anyone interested, you know, contact your state affiliate, contact your licensing body, try to get involved, and you can really be a part of the change that you want in your own profession. So I would leave on that note. Get out there, get involved.
Excellent. And you're a spectacular advocate for our profession and for the, you know, for the registry and for professional bodies as well, for those networking opportunities, for those educational opportunities. So no, I think you did a great job with that. And I do appreciate you being on the show today.
I appreciate being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Radcast. We are simplifying the way that you receive real, relevant information and convenient CE credits. Go and take your quiz and get your credit. Visit our website at rad-cast.com for other episodes, for show notes and those all-important study guides, and for information about upcoming live webinars. Tell your friends, and you have yourself a rad day.